Brave New World.
Hello and welcome to Brave New World programme. My name's John Harrison. Trade talks, as we know, have been going on for some time between the US and China. And the main subject of debate appears to be currency control, trade issues, sanctions and so on. At the same time, there's another actually much publicised story. That's a story of the 5G Huawei, if you like, confrontation, because some Western governments, including the UK and the US, consider this whole issue to be actually an issue of security. And beyond all of that, there's a race to use advanced AI system, artificial intelligence systems, to develop new weapon systems based on artificial intelligence. And if you're not frightened, you may well be. So sit tight, enjoy the program. And I'm very pleased to welcome to the program Gemma Knott, a political economy postgraduate student at the University of Sydney. Welcome to the program, Gemma.
Thanks for having me, John.
Now, first of all, let's just do some general sort of investigatory type question and answers, please. What is the role of artificial intelligence in the defense industries at the moment of the US?
I think the US has probably been the first major world player to begin a heavy amount of research funding. And of course, every other major world player is playing very quick catch-ups.
Right.
But so I think the US has previously relied on, you know, I think as we know, human proxies or paid mercenaries in the past. And the advancement of unmanned vehicles and tanks is probably going to be one of the biggest changes in the way that conventional warfare plays out across the globe. So there's quite a lot of research being put into hyper-intelligent drones and recognition systems that allow for picking up on targets faster and more effectively than when done manually by human beings. And of course, you know, with other countries like China and Russia, there's also a significant level of investment being put into fighter jets as well. The Zionist entity as well is currently trialing fighter jets that are operated autonomously by nearby pilots.
Yeah.
That can provide a level of protection for pilots in action. And obviously the same goes for unmanned tanks, which Russia have developed and are currently putting through a few defense strategies in this regard. And Russia are funding a robotic task force, which is, I guess, sort of maybe accurately being labeled Skynet, which is essentially unmanned tanks that are able to communicate and strategize with each other with quite a minimal level of operation from humans.
Well, I haven't got it. I'm beginning to understand what a vast universe of technological development you're talking about. And I'm already a little bit nervous, actually, in asking you to talk about these things. And listeners, you may be aware that we're talking about subjects that perhaps aren't covered fully in the mainstream press in our various respective countries. So this new weaponization, if you like, of artificial intelligence is something that's already happening now, isn't it? We're not talking about the future. Talking about now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's happening in the here and now, and it's sort of slowly being trialed. Right now, as I was talking about, some of those unmanned tanks are being used in Russia to guard other weapon systems. So they clearly are capable enough to be trusted by national governments in operation. But obviously, there's so much more, there's so much farther to go. And in terms of where it will go, I guess we can paint a dystopian picture, but it's still, you know, a guessing game at this point.
Now, you mentioned that probably the country that has been investing the most into this and probably for the longest time is the United States of America. But China and Russia and some other countries have been playing the catch-up game. Now, how close are they to the States? I mean, is this a neck-and-neck race, or is the US so far ahead or behind that it's not really a race at all?
You know, there's a strong attempt to politicize the level of advancement within each country, but I think it's fair to say that they all are currently leading respectively in different areas of AI development. And as you can imagine, the vast differences in their respective economies and resources available to them kind of make that a necessity. So in fact, I think what we're seeing playing out in this fight to be the number one is probably the realization of the US's limitations largely constructed by their own economic design, if you will.
Yeah.
So what I mean is that the US are able to import a lot of human capital from the best universities and research centers in the world into Silicon Valley due to the incentives in joining the US labor market. So, you know, it's possible to say that they're currently leading in terms of certain types of innovation for that reason. Where China is fast filling up the gap is in the ability to quickly apply new projects. So, for example, with running out projects required dealing with vast quantities of national infrastructure or updates to national infrastructure, such as the surveillance programs we've sort of heard a lot about in mainstream media right now. Russia, of course, as well, have made it clear that they understand, you know, the necessity in rolling out these types of projects as well. So I think Russia are probably lagging behind China and the US right now. The two sort of like major players are definitely China and the US. And I think anyone attempting to sort of bet against China in this race would lose, basically.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a short break here and carry on this fascinating conversation.
Brave New World.
Welcome back to Brave New World program. Today, we are talking about the race to develop artificial intelligence, not only to run our homes and make sure our fridges keep the right temperature, but to develop weapon systems, some of which are already in operation. I'm talking to Gemma Nott, a political economy postgraduate student at the University of Sydney, about all of this. Welcome back, everybody. Gemma, in what way does the sort of the infrastructure development of Chinese industry boost the Chinese AI industry? I know that, and we haven't got time to go into the different economic structures, but we could perhaps just briefly touch on what are the advantages and the disadvantages of the Chinese system in terms of AI creation, development, application?
Yes, I think the biggest one, it really is in China's fast ability to collect data at quite fast speeds. So, of course, you know, as I mentioned before, they are undergoing these massive surveillance programs. Mm. But what is fundamentally necessary to quickly improve and adapt the learning processes of artificial intelligence, which can then later be applied to weapons machinery, is the ability to collect vast quantities of data. So an example of this would be their facial recognition systems that's being rolled out by the supergiant AI company Baidu. And that's a project which is so extensive that would be comparatively very hard to carry out in the US yet. Mm. And not only is it extremely profitable because that data can then be sold on to e-commerce companies, but it can also simply just be used to make AI smarter. So they have programs like Deep Eyes, which are essentially focused on a level of surveillance, which is really unprecedented in history. And it can be used for crime prevention and similar things to that at the surface level. But their main purpose is providing a feedback loop of information to advance AI learning. And that can then be applied onto their defense programs.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? I'm not going to ask you about the advantages of the US system, because I think listeners are quite familiar with the way that US industry works and how it's financed and all that. But perhaps I would like to ask you, Gemma, you know, we've talked about arms races before, haven't we, during the Cold War and everything. And recently, you know, people have been talking to talk again about a new Cold War. But Cold War to me means arms race. And we know that in physical, you know, metal weapons are now also possibly going to be redesigned, and we're going to see a whole new generation of nuclear distribution systems, nuclear bombs, and so on. But is this also an arms race? Is the AI, the race to apply AI into weapons and weaponize it, also an arms race that we just don't know? We possibly don't know because we don't understand what's going on. We're Philistines, really, aren't we? I mean, I'm not talking about you, but general population, me included.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this is definitely an arms race, but yeah, I don't think it's necessarily comparable quite to the Cold War arms race between the US and the Soviet Union. I think probably because the industrial arms race centered around a sort of type of innovation that led to simply peaking at the edge of one another's production in terms of quality or speed. So, you know, that next form of innovation was just slightly above the other. Whereas to some degree in the AI race, it will completely transform markets and essentially also represents a sort of modern industrial revolution as well. So I guess it can be considered an arms race in that the industrial revolution were, you know, very much operating alongside the Cold War. Mm. So I think we need to understand it in a way that is slightly more expansive, I guess you could say.
Got it.
The comparison is apt in the sense that whoever wins the AI race will have a drastic effect on the US's ability to contain China via the South China Sea. And of course, that has roll-on effects for the US economy.
Right. Well, that was going to be my next question. What will happen to the US, in fact, if it loses this new race? And you've already answered it in a way. But the implications are incredibly far-reaching, aren't they? We're talking really about everything. And Chinese AI technology is already being used throughout the Western world. I mean, this is, if we were to suddenly take out all the Chinese components of all the computers that exist everywhere, we probably wouldn't be able to produce this program, you know, and nobody would be able to listen to it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's incredibly expansive. So I think, you know, I mean, in terms of the effects that it might have on, you know, the US's foreign policy, mm-hmm. I think it would be so massive. I, like, for example, at this stage, I think we can probably only speculate about the US, you know, potentially winning or losing the AI race, but whether or not they do will absolutely play out, or when we will be able to determine whether or not they do, would play out in terms of a conventional war, I should say. Mm. For example, whether they corner the market on technological superiority in quite different areas. So whether these weapons are tested in conventional warfare, and they're likely to do so in the context of potentially a world war.
Yeah.
But whether that plays out in the next decade or so after China reaches its targets and the Pentagon complete their new AI programs, it would be unlike anything we've ever seen before, because it would be so much quicker, so much more effective. And also, I mean, obviously it's a very abstract idea at this point, but determine a type of global superiority that we haven't seen before.
Right. And if China loses, so to speak, well, I don't think we can say that kind of loses, but if it turns out that China will not be the harbingers of a certain new kind of technology that can be weaponized very effectively, and it happened to be more on the American side, that will totally transform Asia, won't it, as well? I mean, if you're looking at geopolitically in terms of economics and in terms of politics, in terms of armed forces and in terms of everything, I guess.
Yeah. Look, I think it potentially provides more leeway for the US to prevent what are sort of in a potential internal economic collapse that they might be heading towards.
Who, the Chinese or the Americans? Economic collapse.
Americans, in doing so, remain on top as a center of global economic domination, which is quite important for the Chinese context, because it allows them to offset, you know, massive trade that they're potentially running through an economic boost in new industries. And secondly, also because they're able to continue their regime of currency deflation in competing economies and capital extraction through interventionist policy. So it would have devastating impacts on China for that reason, as a country as well that has not really experienced major instability since the Cultural Revolution, really. And given China's population size and the fact that they're, you know, the industrial center of the global economy, it would really have devastating flow-on effects.
Gemma, you're a postgraduate student in the University of Sydney. May I ask you, please, a final question? Do you consider this to be sort of the most important thing that's going on right now? Perhaps we don't give it very much attention, as much attention we should, the development of AI in China and the possible changes that will cause to the global weapon system scenario, or not?
Yeah, I think it's possible to say that it's one of the most important things happening right now. Mm. I think that, you know, of course, the US's motivations in terms of this arms race with China is not just the military-industrial complex, or not just driven by the military-industrial complex, because, you know, there are other players in the US market who want, you know, a share of the Chinese economy too, like the major players in Wall Street. And, you know, I think that there are, however, massive alarm bells being sounded right now, even within Silicon Valley, that their own political classes are not taking this race as seriously as it otherwise could be.
Right.
But I really do, because at the end of the day, whoever wins this arms race, and, you know, Putin said it himself, it may have sounded like a form of catastrophizing at the time, but, you know, whoever wins the arms race rules the world.
Okay, we'll end the program here. Very, very interesting. I hope you will honor us with your presence again, Gemma. Highly interesting talking to you. Thank you very much indeed, listeners, for listening to this program. Do tune in again next week. Goodbye.